Tape 8, Side 1. National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Program. This is Mildred Menlo, who with my colleague Ruth Weiner are interviewing Mr. William Block. Note, because of a problem, the original Tape 8, which we had with Mr. Block talking with us, was accidentally destroyed and is not usable. I therefore am dictating the information that should have been on the original Tape 8. I have copious notes of our interview with Mr. Block, and I will dictate this information in the first person, as though Mr. Block himself was relating all of the things that the tape contained. I was a member of the Pittsburgh Symphony Board for over 40 years. I worked with the various conductors, especially with Fritz Reiner, and Mrs. Bramer, who was so active with the symphony, and I worked together for many years. After 40 years, I thought it was time to step down and let some of the younger people come on the board. In looking about for something to do, Mr. Elmer Trautman, the director of social agencies, headed a committee in Lawrenceville that had a daycare center and a bathhouse for itinerant people. Eventually, I was asked to serve on that board. To this day, the daycare center is still in existence, but the bathhouse is no longer used. After that, Jack Hines asked me to study the Federation of Social Agencies. He said they needed lay people and recommended that I head the Health and Welfare Association, which was being established. I said I would help, but as usual, I became deeply involved and became the first president. In order to get able people to work with me, I asked corporations for some of their young executives to work on the board with me. Ben Jones, who headed a department at Mellon Bank and eventually became president of Mellon, headed a citizens group. And many local citizens were chosen for board position. We did important work. Elmer Trautman was the guiding light. He was competent in all areas. Joe Bart, who was the mayor of Pittsburgh, asked William Block to chair the committee for urban redevelopment. Now, the Committee of Urban Redevelopment must file social plans. Mo Coleman was a remarkable aide. The committee was very large, and we eventually decided on a plan. Then I was asked by Al Tronzo, who headed the public housing relocation assignment committee, to work with him. Dan Pietragello headed the authority. They were very concerned about housing going from mixed to all white. It would affect schools. Talking desegregation, Tronzo tried to maintain a balance. Pressure for blacks to get good housing was very important. An effort was made to keep the committee working along these lines, but it was not successful and led to trouble in school systems. Mrs. Ahrens, who was president of the school board, faced serious problems in this regard, and she was battered by members of the committee and the public. One of the problems was that much housing had degenerated, and lots of it should be destroyed and rebuilt. Of great importance to me was my association with the Gateway to Music Committee. Musicians of the Symphony asked Mr. Block to organize a corps to receive money so that they could eventually do the performances they wanted to do. The string players decided that they would be the first to form a group, but they needed a corporate image. I decided to head this group. They wanted to play in schools, but needed the vehicle of incorporation in order to set this up. I was on the board and became president. Heinz Foundation made an initial gift of $5,000 to this committee. The players charged the school a modest amount for the appearances. They made contracts with the city schools to play in a certain number of schools. They set up a string group, a brass group, and quintets. They contracted with the ballet, expanded into performing arts. Dan Kamen helped. Dale Hershey is now the president of the group. Very active with the group was Fanny Cohn, whose husband, Sidney, was with the symphony for so many years. They sent groups out of the county. It was a very good project. It was harder, eventually, to get corporate contributions. The United States Steel Foundation always mailed checks to this group. They thought it was a very worthwhile committee, and the project was really worth continuing. However, after a while, money became tight, and they could no longer count on U.S. Steel checks. The group had survived and rendered 400 services a year to the public in the local schools and outside of the country. It does in-depth work in training and demonstrates many areas. It has an excellent percussion group. Organizations like Gateway are needed today. Schools have limited facilities. Gateway is very close to my heart, and anything that can be done to help musicians and the schools in developing a love of music, I think is important. Eventually, I became a member of the board of the Historical Society. Many people helping along the way. New property was being developed. In 1927, there was a new development in my family. William Randolph Hearst had made tentative deals that would buy the Post Sun. Arthur Braun was the trustee of an estate that owned the Post and the Sun. However, they would not sell to Hearst. Hearst turned to my father. They had had many years of association. My father's advertising service was used by the Hearst publications for many years. Father represented the Morning Examiner in New York, and Mr. Hearst asked Father to buy the Post and Sun and combine the Telegraph with the Post and the Gazette. Father was not in a position to buy, but Hearst put up the money for both. Father had an option of 10 years to pay his share. By 1937, he had completely purchased the paper. The Depression years made it difficult. Father lived in New York. In 1937, I worked in the New York office, then went to Toledo. Father decided Bill Jr. should come to Pittsburgh. I lived at the Bigelow Apartments. I was not too happy. I had a small one-bedroom apartment with a Murphy bed. I worked 10 months with the building construction of the new building that was being put up for the Post-Gazette. I went in 1943, I went into service. In 1946, I was back to Pittsburgh. Everything in Pittsburgh was very competitive. It was very difficult to get newsprint. We had to use every imaginable ruse in order to come by it. However, by 1949, more newsprint was available. Hearst was very anxious for Father to do a Sunday newspaper and made available the King Features comics that were used in Chicago. We plunged into the Sunday field. The Sunday paper lasted only 1 year. It was not the kind of a thing that we wanted to do. In 1950, the newspaper strike lasted from October 1st to November 17th. And when we were ready to go back to print, a huge storm made it impossible to get the paper out. Hearst owned the Pittsburgh Press, which dominated the field in Allegheny County for advertising. Making great headway seemed almost impossible because Hearst was dying, and nobody seemed to have the authority to act for him. In 1953 to 1954, they were not interested in any combination with Block. Hearst went downhill, the Sun Telegraph and the Press. When I realized the seriousness of their situation, I went to Kaufman's and explained what I thought was a complete change in the newspaper field in Pittsburgh. After much discussion and negotiation, I was able to get a $200,000 advertising order from Kaufman's. After that, we bought the Sun Telegraph cheap. It was not good. In order to reduce costs, we set up a joint operation of sales advertising with Scripps Howard. Sales and advertising were joint, but there were separate editorial departments, and we made this agreement with Scripps Howard. 1961, we moved to our present quarters. Scripps Howard was running the Pittsburgh Press, and until the strike of 92, things had moved along. The press had very bad relationships with the Teamsters. Koza, who headed the union, was forced by government to give up because of questionable associations. Costs rising, Scripps Howard evaluated distribution and decided it was too costly. A contract expired in 1991. In 1992, they set out to radically change the distribution. The idea was that 460 jobs would be eliminated. Since only 600 jobs existed in the union, this was a radical change. The union agreed to 260 layoffs. September 92 fell apart. October 2nd, Scripps Howard announced the press was for sale. Poor communications between the Post-Gazette and the press made it difficult for us to understand how this announcement was made without our being notified. If sold in 91, the Pittsburgh Press would have gotten double what it finally went for in 92. The first Boston company was handling the sale of the press. On the 5th of October, the Block family had a meeting about the possibility of purchasing the press. Family was not in a position financially. It had a good deal of debt because of expansions elsewhere. But they started to investigate the purchase. It was important that they make a deal with less burdens on its holdings. They finally offered the Monterey, California newspaper in part of the deal. On October 28th, Scripps Howard accepted. November 28th, we had to complete contracts with the unions. It was important to complete these contracts because we needed antitrust approval in order to complete the deal. In order to proceed, we disregarded the original team that had been negotiating and assigned a new team to negotiate the contract. The new group did a fantastic job. The union trusted the Post-Gazette, and the general mood seemed to lead to the termination of the serious problems of the past. It was not easy to reduce the number of workers. By November 17, the antitrust moved to examine the proposal. They made demands at the first, not clear. They wanted more information. Fortunately, we knew what they really wanted in 1 week. We had to wait for a decision by the Judicial Department. They blamed the press for the lack of information, and this had to be completed by December 30th. There was not much we could say. Finally, at 3 o'clock on the afternoon of December 30th, the antitrust group approved. We were so excited. The editorial people were unsure about their jobs, and we moved quickly to let those know who would stay with us. 70 to 80 members of the editorial board were told that they would stay with us. About 1,200 employees were held. The problem was, when could we really start? After all, a distribution system had been dissolved, and a new setup was in the works. We finally decided that the first edition would be issued on January 18th, 1993. It was too fast and difficult. There were two things: rebuilding the old, invoking a new system. We had computer problems. Delivery problems were difficult to start. And we felt that we should have taken a little more time. However, today, as we are proceeding, we feel that we accomplished a great deal. One must examine the role of the publisher. And I had decided at this point that I wanted to withdraw as far away as possible and permit my son and my nephew to function. As chairman of the board, one does little. Sit in on meetings and offer as little advice as possible. I meet with my son, but I do not want to interfere. 8:30 Wednesday mornings, we have a meeting with the directors of all departments. Coordinate charity field. My son and my nephew are co-publishers. Must be saddled with the responsibility if they want these positions. It has been a wonderful experience to see this changeover, but I am still at my desk every morning and hope that I shall be able to continue for some time. My grandchildren in college. I have a granddaughter at Yale who is very bright and probably will get into the business. She is very interested in music and plays very well. Who sets the policy for the paper? The editorial board. People with expertise sit in when necessary. Political campaigns are very important, and we try to interview all candidates. Examining the presidential campaign is always a very serious and responsible undertaking. My nephew John lives in Toledo, but he and my son are less influenced by party than the individual. My father was a rigid Republican. He knew all the big shots. In 1928, he was very strong for Hoover. Yet, he was an admirer of Al Smith's. And not wanting to be connected with Al Smith, he deposited money in my name, and I presented the check to Raskin for Al Smith. Jewish life is very important. People of Jewish faith have great talent and lend a culture to this community. In music, art, medicine, these channels open to them. Education. They are students, they are scholars, they are academics. They are outstanding in math, technology. Jews have a social conscience, and the Jewish community is very important in the community. Jews are much more generous than their fellow Christians. And I have a great deal of respect for the social consciousness of Jews. I was in Israel in 1963. I enjoyed a young, vibrant nation. They seemed to have some humility at that time, a good deal of trouble. I had many interesting conversations with Teddy Kollek, and I found it very interesting to see the way the planning and the activity and the devotion and dedication of the Jews in 73, I was there, after the war. A certain bravado was riding hard over everything, confident and blustery. I felt uncomfortable because it was a completely different mood. The Yom Kippur War had taken a great deal of the confidence from these people. And one wondered where they would go from here. In 1983, the troubled economy was not good. Enemies around, groping for solutions, government by deadlock, and yet there were wonderful things still going on. The technology in Israel was superb. What was being done with American dollars? It was important that the maximum use of these dollars be made. I would like to point out at this point that in 1963, there was a man by the name of Bergman, who was a professor at Hebrew University, interested in atomic energy, who played a tremendous role in developing atomic energy in Israel. I should like to point out also at this point that my brother was an organic chemist as well as a publisher. This is the end of the information contained in the notes on tape 8. From here, we shall proceed to tape 9. Operation. You must leave to co-club publishers major decisions on editorial. My nephew is the editor-in-chief of the paper. All Americans want to see people succeed. I forgot to mention in discussing Israel that Sharon was not an admired character. His bitter opposition for self-government for Palestinians cannot be considered. We must do for the Palestinians something. They deserve some consideration for self-government. Whether Jordan could absorb all the Palestinians is a question. Before the establishment of Israel, Jordan was occupied by Arabs. End of side one, tape 8, continued on tape 9.